And a good Wednesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donnick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody's having a good start to your cold morning. It's going to warm up, though, today. I think it was like 20 degrees when we all woke up this morning. A little on the chilly side.
Quite chilly.
That's what happens, though. It's January.
You know what? It's winter. It's all right.
Yeah, it's winter.
It's okay. Go with it.
It's okay.
Embrace it.
It's January. It's late okay. January.
I'll give you a fun story with the cold. I've had some fun with our trip to Edmonton, mm-hmm. which was a little over a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
There was a we took a ride because we sure as heck weren't going to walk. It was minus 26 or whatever it was. It hovered between about minus 19 and minus 32 the entire time we were there. So it's night. We were going out to dinner. We went to a place about a mile away. Okay, so we get a Uber or Lyft or whatever it is, and our driver is an immigrant from Somalia. Great guy. We're talking to him. And I just, we're talking about the weather. And he had the great line. He just goes, "You must embrace it." We're like, "All right, man. Okay.
You don't really have a choice.
Embrace the cold." He's right.
I was like, you got to like his attitude. Otherwise, what are you going to do?
Move.
You're stuck.
Yeah.
Move.
Yeah. I mean,
either you're going to get over it or move.
He's like, "I'm from Somalia. I came here because I wanted to come here."
Wow. Okay.
"You must embrace it."
It's cold a lot of places that it's usually not cold. I talked to somebody down in Mobile right now. It's cold.
Yeah.
Mobile, Alabama.
Something going on down there?
Yeah, there's something going on down there. And in fact, they said they were talking to John Robinson this morning. So
I saw
the GM of the Titans is down there.
I saw a clip on Twitter of what's the kid's name from Oregon? Hebert?
Justin Herbert?
Herbert.
Hebert.
Not Bobby Hebert.
Not Bobby Hebert's son.
Justin Herbert threw a touchdown pass to Kalijah Lipscomb in a drill or whatever. It was a pretty good clip. So you got all the football worlds coming together.
It's officially draft season. That's, even though the Super Bowl hasn't happened yet, it's officially draft season.
Let's be thankful that it's, we're mid-January and not mid-December talking about the draft, right? Yeah. Which has happened before.
In Miami, the city, the host city for the Super Bowl,
mm-hmm.
it was down in the low 40s last night. And they're getting unseasonably cold weather right now. And I guess the story is that it really messes with the iguanas. Like, if they don't know, I guess there's stories of them like falling out of trees and stuff because they don't know. It messes with their body, being that they're not supposed to be in temperatures like that.
So does it kill them?
No, I don't think it kills them. I just think,
because I saw some tweets about this.
Actually, some of them may have died being frozen.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine that they're not used to that.
Their body is not equipped for,
because they're cold blooded. So
yeah, so it's kind of messing with the iguanas.
Hmm.
But I don't think that's going to be an issue for the Super Bowl. I do remember I covered the Colts and the Bears. When was that? 05?
Well, that's 06
in Miami? Peyton?
06. That's when they won, right?
06 season.
That's the one they won.
Yeah.
It
was raining.
It poured the entire Super Bowl. Poured. I don't think weather's going to be an issue, but it's still kind of early to tell. Did anybody see what happened in Kansas last night?
I did
several dozen times.
I guess we've talked a lot about college basketball for all the wrong reasons.
Like, I thought WWE SmackDown and moved to Friday. But
not very good, but they're getting attention today. Not the attention they want, but it's kind of like NASCAR and a big wreck. It's like, I'm not sure that's the attention you want, but they're getting it. It's a bad look, really bad look, and there's going to be a huge fallout today. And what's really interesting is the SEC Big 12 Challenge is this weekend.
It is interesting timing, isn't it?
Guess who Tennessee plays?
They play the Jayhawks.
They play the Jayhawks in Lawrence. Right? Isn't it? It's in Lawrence, right?
I don't know.
Is that right? Yeah.
I know at least two players that will not be there, probably several more, because
I would say
if you leave the bench, you're ejected for the next game, aren't you?
Yeah, it's in Kansas.
Are they going to have enough? Honestly, are they going to have, because the entire bench left?
By rule, I don't think they've changed the rules since I was playing. We used to have practice of that. If a fight breaks out, if you leave the bench, and you know what? I was likely to be on the bench if it happened. So I had to pay attention.
You knew the rules.
I had to pay attention. If you leave the bench, it's a technical foul for every player that leaves the bench, and you are ejected from the game and the next game. A lot of guys left the bench.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like everybody.
Which would mean that most of the starters left the bench because the starters were certainly not on the court when it was 81-59 in the closing seconds.
Silvio De Sousa, is that how you say it?
I think so.
Yeah. He's in trouble. He's in big trouble.
He might be done.
I was going to say, he may have played his last game at Kansas. If you listen to Bill Self after the game, his press conference, I would be concerned if I were him.
Well, and the other guy...
That he's just suited up for the last time as a Jayhawk.
Number 33 is not far behind. I forget his name.
McCormick.
They both play a significant amount. And they were right in the middle of the whole
thing. Wasn't it Silvio that had the block shot that started it?
Yeah, well, he had the ball stolen from him and then blocked the shot, which I don't blame him for running down there and saying, you're going to steal the ball from me with 4 seconds? We had this discussion, right? We have had this discussion earlier this season.
A 23-point game?
Yeah.
As time was expiring.
When the shot clock is off, you don't do that. So, I'm not blaming him for what happened. There's no excuse for what happened. As Dick Vitale and everybody in the basketball world said, but how do these things happen? Just like how does a brawl happen in baseball? Because somebody does something that you shouldn't do, or at least somebody deems you shouldn't do. But I think every basketball player knows you don't steal the ball, even if it's your rival, with 4 seconds left in a game that's over. The shot clock's off. People stop playing. We're not playing anymore. It's like the kneel down play in football. We're not playing.
Remember the Bucks?
Yeah,
the Greg Schiano thing.
You don't do that.
It's like, we play to the end. Right, no, you don't.
The game's over. But there are some people that do believe what Greg Schiano did. I had some people bark back at me on Twitter saying, hey, we're playing. We're playing basketball. Okay, I get that. But it's a chain of events that's the worst possible scenario goes forward, right? It's the worst possible outcome out of each thing. Guy steals the ball late in the game where he shouldn't have. The guy goes and blocks the shot, which is fine. Oh, you want to steal it from me? I'm not going to let you go down and get the layup. I got no problem with that.
Right.
But then you stand over the guy.
Yeah.
Again, you don't. That's something you don't do. I don't care what the scenario
is. And that right
is,
there
you don't do
is
that.
When things escalated. I mean, you don't taunt.
Right.
Especially at that point. I mean, you're up by 22 or whatever it was.
The game's over.
Yeah, it's over. Just dribble it out and move on.
You had your fun, right? You showed him. That, okay, he stole it from you. You blocked the shot. That should be in right there. You got him.
Right.
And you get some laughs out of that.
But then be the bigger man. Be the bigger man and walk away.
Right. Instead, he takes it to the next level, and then the bench empties, and then here we go.
And then,
so it's like the worst possible domino effect.
And the coaches and officials, everybody loses control at that point. You're not getting it back. But they're fighting in the where the people with disabilities are sitting.
Well, that is the thing that was really scary, is where it happened, because an innocent bystander could have gotten hurt bad.
Yeah.
Right? I haven't heard anything along those lines. They are really lucky.
I know they were
really
trying to get
lucky.
Them out of the way.
Yeah. I did see some people in suits get flung around, you know, just trying to hang on to somebody or pull somebody back. There were cheerleaders in there. I mean, it could have been a lot worse. As it was pretty bad.
Would the coaches get some sort of punishment for this, even though, I mean, is that just...
You know, probably, but... And I heard Dick Vitale and a lot of the Seth Greenbergs, I heard, you know, the fallout when they were trying to analyze it in the moment, were talking about the assistant coaches. But what do you do?
Right.
Unless they were in there trying to break it up. Right? This is what we did when
Weber
I was...
But Weber and Self were in the middle trying to break it up. I mean, so it's not like they're just standing by going, guys.
No, they jumped in.
Weber and
I saw
and
a lot of guys
in the middle
trying.
Yeah.
Assistants. But you can't control a team of 12 guys, right? The preparation is before. You practice that, and you pound it into your team. Guys, if something breaks out, you cannot leave the bench. You can't do it. That's where it all got out of out of hand there. You can't have five assistant coaches hold back 12 guys.
Right.
Even if you wanted to. I don't think you could do it. It happens so fast. The Kansas State bench is within 15 feet of where all of it happens, right? It happens right at their end where their bench is. And so once the Kansas State guys go, then the Kansas guys feel like they got to go, just like any brawl.
And you said, what did you say the punishment? You get ejected when you leave the bench.
I got to go back. I don't know that this is the rule still, but I think it's still. Because they never showed it.
Because they had to put five.
Yeah, they had to bring guys back on the court and shoot technical fouls. Because each guy that leaves the bench supposedly gets a technical. You're ejected from the game, and then you miss the next game.
So who
doesn't miss the next game? That's my question.
Like, does the NCAA or... You know, do they come out and say you got to forfeit the next game?
No, they're not going to do that.
I don't think they'll
probably
do that.
Stagger the suspensions. I mean, they're going to have to.
Is that
layer
what
they're
talking about?
No, I mean that's just they're not going to forfeit the game. They're going to have to figure out a way to stagger it. If the club team
to come play.
I mean, this guy
fraternity champion.
This guy will be allowed to play this game, but he's not going to play the next game, or he's, you know, they're going to have to figure out something.
Yeah, but see, then you get into a gray area there because it's like. You try to lobby. Oh, well, I would rather this guy miss this game, but not this game. So,
well, you're not going to get to lobby anything. You don't. Kansas has no say.
Yeah.
They're going to get told. I think it's the Big 12 that would.
Yeah, the Big 12 is going to dole out. I haven't seen anything yet that there's been any punishment thrown out there. I haven't seen anything yet, but this game is set to tip at 3 on Saturday, and I have to believe if you're Tennessee. You're going to really like your chances now because I think it's going to have a weird feel to it already. Kansas is going to be missing some important pieces, and I think that's a game they can absolutely win. I think, by the way, they're starting to look a lot better. I know they haven't played great teams. Ole Miss, by the way, I feel bad for Kermit Davis.
Yikes.
Ole Miss is, woo, wow, are they bad. They're not good. They will not be in the NCAA tournament this year, I don't think. They look like a really bad team. So I don't know. We'll probably learn something, I would think, while we're on the air today. I would think. I don't know. Unless this is a hot mess and they're like really trying to figure out how this is going to work and maybe it takes longer, but we may know something during the show. We'll come back. John Glennon from The Athletic. We'll talk to him next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Trying to figure out Elijah's theme, The Doors. They got shown The Door. They left.
This one's kind of random.
Today. I don't know. This is just no
this
theme.
One's no necessarily theme for this one. Just been on a big Doors kick.
Okay.
I see.
Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that. We bring in John Glennon.
I know the library pretty well.
Oh, I do too.
Yeah.
Do too.
You can go pretty deep.
I can go really deep.
I discovered The Doors when I was a sophomore in high school.
Did you?
And I was on a huge Doors kick for like that entire season, the entire year.
Yep. John, there's no way to segue from that. I'm just going
to
say
open
hello.
Open the door to John Glennon.
Yeah, there we go. Look
well
at
done.
That.
Well
Nicely
done.
Nicely done. Here, you want to come host this?
Sure, I'm in.
So there's a lot. I know... John Robinson's down in Mobile, but I'm not envious of his job this offseason. Something we've been talking about a lot in the last couple of days. Let's start with everybody knows the big two that are of importance. But I'm gonna ask you, who's three on your list? If you're addressing their moves in the offseason and who they need to keep and who they're not gonna be able to keep, we know Henry and Tannehill are 1 and 1A in no particular order. Depends on who you talk to. Who's next, in your opinion, that they got to get done?
In my opinion, it's Jack Conklin, you know, and I probably wouldn't have said that at the start of the year or maybe even, you know, partially through the year. But I think the way Jack Conklin finished You know, I think he is maybe not quite back up to his all-pro form of, you know, the rookie season and part of his second year, but he's a pretty strong right tackle right now. And the way this team is built right now, you know, assuming Derrick Henry comes back, I think the way that offensive line was playing and opening holes for Derrick Henry, if you can bring Jack Conklin back and, you know, get that chemistry working again, I think that's a huge step in the right direction. And in terms of sacks as well, we saw so much improvement in Jack Conklin's game. And, you know, I think it would be, you know, more difficult, in my opinion, to kind of find a plug-and-play right tackle, you know, put someone right into Jack Conklin's position than it would be Logan Ryan, who is number four in my book in terms of getting re-signed. I think they're a little bit deeper, probably a cornerback. You know, if you consider Malcolm Butler's coming back, Dory Jackson's coming back, they've got some depth guys. You know, if you draft another young corner, I think you're probably in decent position there. So as much as I think the Titans would benefit certainly from Logan Ryan coming back as well, my mind, I think Jack Conklin is just a bit higher on the priority list.
So unfortunately, and I know it's always a gamble, it looks like they're going to go one for one in the gambles. Mariota was the right decision. But if they keep Conklin, it was going to be the gamble that didn't pay off, right? Because they're going to have to pay a lot more.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to blame them, you know, because at the time they had to make the decision about whether or not to pick up the option year on Jack Conklin's contract. You know, he wasn't at the top of his game last year. I think he was still kind of feeling his way back from the injury, still and still getting used to the zone scheme. I think he was much more of a kind of a gap scheme sort of blocker. But yeah, so it would have been about $12.9 million had they picked up the option last year. Now they're probably looking at something more in the average of about $16 million perhaps on Jack Conklin. So
oh,
it's come up a little bit.
It's 12? I thought it was less than that. I didn't know it was that much. I thought it was below 10. No?
I could go back and check.
I could be wrong. I think it
was double digits.
Was it?
Yeah,
okay.
I think we're in the neighborhood here.
I thought it was double a little digits, bit under 10. Okay.
But certainly, yeah, he's going to come out better as a result of not having that contract or not having that option year picked up.
Do you believe John Robinson's going to have to go to certain players? Not that he's looking to get rid of them, but do you think because of what we're talking about, he's going to have to ask a player or two to maybe restructure, in your opinion?
Certainly possible, because, you know, the more you look at it, the more you see a lot of needs this offseason. Not a lot of needs, but a lot of business that has to be taken care of. And if you're hopeful of trying to bring back, you know, the big four of Tannehill, Henry, Conklin, and Logan Ryan, it's not completely out of the question. You know, the Titans have probably $55 to $60 million under the projected cap right now, and you know, you could probably look at some of the veteran guys that may not be part of the future and say these guys may be gone. You know, maybe it's a Deion Lewis, maybe even a Delanie Walker, and save some money there. But still, that's a lot of money if you're trying to bring all four of those guys back, and then if you're trying to add, you know, the top priority probably, and whether it's draft or free agency, is an edge rusher. Those guys don't come cheap, clearly. And so if you want to add someone there, you're going to have to pay some money in free agency probably. So it's certainly possible that they may have to ask some guys to restructure, and certainly possible that some of these veterans that maybe still have a year or two left on their contract won't be back next year.
You know, they've done a good job of filling gaps, because there's been many off seasons we're sitting here going, where the heck do they start? I mean, there's so many holes to fill. Where do they even begin when free agency period starts? That is not the case today. It's much, much, much lesser. So it's more almost opinion-based. I mean, it's like last year we knew they're going to go out and try to get you know, an offensive lineman. They went out and they landed Saffold. But when you look around to what – if you were to sit here in late January, guess where John Robinson starts? What position do you think he starts to address first in free agency?
I think their biggest need, whether that's free agency or the draft, has to be, you know, an edge rusher, someone to bring more pressure on the quarterback on a regular basis. You know, they've got some guys who can do that. Certainly, Harold Landry had his share of sacks last year, and actually Kamale Correa really came on towards the end of the year as well. But, you know, I think in that game against Kansas City, when we saw Patrick Mahomes back there running around for 2, 3, 4, 5 seconds or more sometimes, and granted, Patrick Mahomes has done that to a lot of teams, but it really illustrated to me the fact that this team has to have more of a presence out there, and I think that has to be the number one priority. But you're right, you know, there aren't a glaring handful of needs that need to be addressed. I don't think John Robinson needs to spend as much money this year, fortunately, as he did last year in free agency. And, you know, I kind of wrote about this at the end of the year, too, after the loss to Kansas City. Boy, how much, you know, more optimism, I think, is there to this Titans team than we've seen in a long time. You know, when you can potentially bring back an offense that was averaging 30 points a game for the last 10 games of the regular season, who can remember anything like that for the Titans? To me, I think there's a better feel going into this offseason about the Titans than I can remember in a good long time.
Talking to John Glennon from The Athletic. And, John, last night on Inside the NFL, and I know this was circulated a lot on the social media channels, there was a nice moment captured by NFL Films with Marcus Mariota congratulating Ryan Tannehill on the job he's done. The way he handled himself after the game, you know, it's clear with every single person, whether it's the media that's covering him, the coaching staff, and on around his teammates, they have all said the highest things about Marcus Mariota, and this is pretty much the end. It's not going to happen here. And so I think this is one of the great examples of a guy kind of riding off on the white horse, even though he didn't do what everybody hoped he would do. It's a really strange thing in that regard.
It really is, yeah. You know, he's pretty unique in that regard, I would say, in that he was picked to be a franchise quarterback to completely, you know, take this team to the next level and lead it for, you know, maybe a decade or so. And, yeah, we're not going to see that happen. I think if there's anybody in Nashville that's not pulling for Marcus Mariota to succeed elsewhere, I'd be surprised. You know, I think everybody wants him to have a Ryan Tannehill story where he goes somewhere next year and maybe without the pressure of being that franchise guy, without being that former first-round pick, the cornerstone, maybe that helps him succeed elsewhere just as it did for Ryan Tannehill. And the things he learned maybe by watching for 10 games or so, maybe that helps him as well. But certainly we missed. And certainly, even though he didn't take this team, you know, to the conference championship as Tannehill did, you know, I think he did play a significant part certainly in turning this franchise around. You know, a franchise that had gone through the 3-13 season, you know, his first year around here, if I'm remembering correctly, and then to have gone 9-7 for a number of years. You know, the Titans are one of very few teams that put together four straight seasons over 500, and Marcus Mariota had a lot to do with that. You know, certainly both with his play and with his leadership and just, you know, the word that continually pops up for Marcus Mariota is just class. You know, there was never a letdown for Marcus Mariota in that department, just as classy a guy as you could possibly find. Never bitter about his situation, certainly not openly, publicly bitter, I should say, and just remained a leader and a friend to his teammates.
John, we're going to continue to talk about the quarterback position for this Titans team until there is a starting quarterback under contract, because right now there isn't. Logan Woodside's it. So the debate is going to be had. Should the Titans re-sign Ryan Tannehill, or do they take a run at somebody like Tom Brady? We've had a big conversation on the show of would you rather have Tom Brady for a year or Tannehill for multiple years, and I think it's a mixed bag. Where do you stand on that?
I think I'd probably have to go with the Tannehill camp, honestly. And that may get you some crazy looks. National fan, you'd rather have Ryan Tannehill than Tom Brady. But I think you have to look at the stages, obviously, of their career, their ages. You know, Tom Brady is 43. You know, injured more now than he has certainly been in the past. Less effective now than he was in the past, even though you can certainly make the argument that he didn't have much of a cast of receivers around him. We understand that. But, you know, I like what Ryan Tannehill did last year. And this was not a small sample size for Ryan Tannehill. This was not like he came in for a couple games at the end of the year that were meaningless, had some good stats, and you wonder, hey, maybe we'll give this guy a chance. This was 10 regular season games, as I mentioned, averaging over 30 points, you know, taking a team to the conference championship, even though they didn't pass as much in the playoffs. I think that was not because of Tannehill's poor performance in any way, shape, or form. You know, he's 31 years old. He clearly is a good fit for this scheme, I think. I like diving in with Tannehill, whether it's just for a if you can't work out something long-term immediately, you can still franchise him, give him another year to say, hey, what can you do that again? Or, you know, or are you the one-year wonder? And then move on after that. I'm just not sold on signing Brady. Again, the age, the injury situation, you know, and I'm not sure, you know, we all make a big deal out of the Brady-Rabel relationship, and certainly that's big. But if you're Tom Brady and you're used to playing in Boston in a big market all these years, and you've got a wife who's a supermodel and used to the big city life, do the Brady family, do the Bradys really want to come to little old Nashville? I don't know if that would be the case either. So certainly that's, you know, it's not a lock that Tom Brady would want to come here. Do you really want to roll the dice there?
John, as Mike Vrabel goes through the process of hiring a new defensive coordinator, you know, one thing that I thought was beneficial to him and why Dean Pease was his first call was having that veteran that he can lean on as he is a young head coach. Do you think he continues down that path and tries to get an established guy that he can, you know, pick the brain of, or does he, you know, do a situation like he was in where you get an up-and-comer and give them a shot to run the defense?
I think there's still a need for a veteran in that department because not only is Mike Vrabel still a fairly young head coach, but really the defensive assistants, there's not a lot of experience on that side of the ball when you look at the defensive coaches. So I think you're looking for a veteran again, someone who runs a scheme similar to what Dean Pease did. You know, obviously the two veteran names probably that come to mind first are Wade Phillips and Romeo Crennel. I'm not sure if you want to go down that path. I don't mean to be the ageist guy, but, you know, they're both 70-plus in years, and at some point I think the Titans want to get away from having a defensive coordinator who is always going to be a year or two away from retirement, as they've had with Dick LeBeau and Dean Pease here. So I do think there is going to be some seasoning required. I don't think he's going to have an up-and-comer, just my belief. But we'll see. That's certainly some mighty big shoes to fill.
John, we did this yesterday when we talked with Jim Wyatt. I'd rather do this at the end because, you know, I didn't want to start off on a very somber note. But obviously you spent a great deal of your career and time not only in this market but at the Tennessean, and you worked alongside David Clymer. We were all saddened to hear the news on Sunday, and so I know he meant a lot to you as well.
Yeah, he sure did, you know, both from personal and professional standpoint. You know, you want to talk about a guy who was the voice of not only one generation, but probably two, three generations around here. When you go back to think that, you know, he started working at the Tennessean, at least in a part-time role, in 1974, and it wasn't too long before he became a columnist. And, you know, let's remember, too, that back in those days, there was not obviously the internet. There were not all kinds of voices that would be heard in terms of sports opinion. So columnists like, you know, David Clymer or Joe Biddle or Larry Woody with the Tennessean, who had those longtime runs, those were what the people saw almost every single day on a regular basis. They were the shapers of opinion in the mid-state and beyond. And David Clymer was certainly one of the best in that regard. You know, I think he would probably be happy that a lot of people considered him at times to be a little curmudgeonly. because he was anything but a soft touch on teams or players or coaches. You know, he held everyone accountable in a good way, and just in the Tennessean itself, the way he mentored, again, not just one generation of sports writers, but two, three, four. You know, everybody always, went to David when they had a question or, wanted to figure out how to do something that they had never done before. And the reporting field will ask David. He's probably done that before. He knows who to talk to. So, yeah, just a tremendous loss. I think on Friday when his services held, we're going to see an awful lot of people whose lives David Clymer impacted over the years.
No doubt. Well said. By the way, we had a really, really good interview with Jeff Perlman yesterday on the show. If you haven't heard his podcast with David Clymer done about 3 weeks ago, you ought to go check it out. So thanks for doing this, John.
Sure. Appreciate you guys having me.
John Glennon from The Athletic. Always good to talk to him. We will come back with a lot more of Darren Donick and Chase next. Hired their next offensive coordinator. You guys seen this?
Yep.
I know it was out yet last night.
Yeah, I knew he interviewed, but it looks like it's a done deal.
Yeah, no, it is. Jay Gruden.
Good hire for them.
It's a really good hire.
I didn't think he would be unemployed long. I didn't think it'd be as a head coach, but definitely as a coordinator. I mean, you look at his resume and what he's done as an OC in his career.
Starting with his Nashville Cats
work.
Yeah,
the Nashville Cats. Yep.
With the OC.
Did he play for the Cats?
No, he came in. He was a great player in the Arena League for Tampa, I think. Right.
I think that's right. Yep.
So is that how he and Pat
were teammates? Yeah.
And then he was the OC.
Back when the Arena League
was the OC,
Pat was
the DC. Remember, as they used to call him, the old soldier.
Yeah,
Eddie Kayat was the coach. What a great guy he was, wasn't he?
He was awesome.
He was so much fun to deal with.
There were some characters.
Yeah.
In the Cats front office. In a part of their broadcast team. Yes,
miss
there
the
were.
Cats. If you walk through Bridgestone Arena, there's still the Nashville Cats logo, yep. Like the first game.
Yep.
Because were they playing there before the Predators?
Do people really miss the Cats?
Probably not. Probably don't either.
But you think anybody's going to be like, you know what? Gosh.
There are people listening right now going, what the hell are the Cats?
Yeah.
They had a good thing going.
They did.
The first go around, they really did. That league messed it up. They got too big for their britches.
The second time around, it was
not as good.
Yeah. No.
Because it was at the wrong time of year.
Yeah.
When it was in the spring.
Right.
It was a great time to do that.
I had fun. I went to a couple of games. I had a lot of fun.
It was the year. Yeah, the Cats played a whole season before the Predators, maybe even two seasons before the Predators ever took the ice.
They had the hot tub.
Yes,
they did have the hot tub.
There were some different profiles that they, different approaches they took with the hot tub, depending on the night.
Well, they did a lot of hot tubs on Friday nights. I know that. I remember that.
But they would yo-yo back and forth, right? They would have some people that would, it would be a little risque in the hot tub, and then they would get some phone calls, and the next week it'd be a dad and his kids in the hot tub. And they'd get a whole nother.
From one extreme to
the
other.
Then they'd get some more phone calls, and then the girls would be back the next week. You know, it was kind of yo-yoed back and forth.
How would you guys answer who's number three or who's next after Henry and Tannehill? Who's next?
I have yo-yoed. Speaking of yo-yoing, I have yo-yoed on this over the past few days. Because, look, I have not hidden it all year long of my affection for Logan Ryan and the season that he's had, the impact that he's had. I think he's a very important player in that secondary on that defense. I think he's somebody that you need to bring back. But with all that said, you cannot ignore the fact that the offensive line became the offensive line that everybody hoped they would be as the season went on. Once Lawan was established after the suspension, the left side really shored up. You started to see Roger Saffold play better. Ben Jones was doing much better. Nate Davis got acclimated as a rookie, and Jack Conklin started playing back to the level, not quite his rookie season, but back to what you expect. And so I think now the Titans are sitting there maybe regretting not picking up the fifth-year option on him, and I think I have to go with Jack Conklin being third on the list.
I think John laid out a pretty interesting argument, saying that while Logan Ryan is the perfect fit and he had a great year, you can look at, okay, what would life be without him? You still have some things. You know, you still have Malcolm Butler coming back. You got Adoree Jackson. You have some of these other guys that they developed and did a decent job. You'd hate to lose them, but in a world where you're probably not going to be able to bring everybody back, if you could only pick one, I think life without Conklin looks a little more bleak.
Right.
I think than life without Logan Ryan, I think.
And you can bring Dennis Kelly back, or you can draft his replacement. I mean, there are things you can do, but and Dennis Kelly has been, you know, one of the best additions that John Robinson made with that trade of Dorial Green-Beckham. He's a great utility guy, but is he your everyday right tackle?
My biggest fear is what I said on Monday. I'm fearful that Dennis Kelly is the backup quarterback that just became the starter.
Yeah.
And how does that usually work? Everybody loves the backup until he's your everyday starter.
Well,
then things change.
This year it worked quite well, but for the Titans.
Well, for half of a season.
Right, but they went to the AFC Championship, so.
Right, but I'm saying, but for a half of a season, I'm saying it's yeah. Always, I mean, Scott Mitchell did that for the Dolphins, and that's right. How he got a gigantic deal with the Lions. Matt Flynn did it with the Packers, and he robbed the NFL for years.
Matt Flynn.
For like five games.
Goes to Seattle to be the starter, and then Russell Wilson takes it.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm just saying, we don't know. We haven't seen it. That's another thing. We haven't seen it for 16 games here.
You're right.
Yeah.
No, it's fair.
We don't know. We don't truly know.
I think Conklin, too, is just coming out of the real big adversity.
Yep.
He could even hit another level,
well,
I think. Don't you think?
He could, but here is, yes, I agree with you on what you said, but the difference is if you're asking me which one has the bigger impact on the field, my answer is Conklin moving forward. If you're asking me who has the bigger impact in the room, it's Ryan.
You're right about that.
So
he is a key guy in the room.
Two important forces, and each one possesses two important things, right?
Yep.
Let's go.
Well, go ahead, and then I'll ask the question.
Let's go to Ben in Dixon. Ben, what's up?
On the Arena League, name me another professional league where you can go and catch a football player. Not a football, but the actual player. Because when you sit in the very front row of the Arena League, you are that close to the action.
I would say at Lambeau Field, you can catch a player.
I mean, they're jumping to you, but when they're reaching out for a pass to catch, I mean, they're literally diving into the sand.
I'm trying to remember because it's been a while. What happens, you know, like in baseball, you get the interference if the fan reaches over. What happened if the fan was reaching over during a play? I don't remember. Is it play ruled dead?
I don't remember that part, but I do remember when they were kicking the field goals and the extra points. The footballs were going up into the second tier level, and going, and some of them were going actually going through the tunnel where you could come out to your seat. And they were many a time they lost many 5-10 footballs a night because fans would grab them
and take off. Yep, take off. Did you ever catch a player?
Austin.
Did you ever catch a player?
Yes, Austin. I had a buddy of mine that had a season ticket. And he always was a big outside of the cute for a big man to catch a small man like a wide receiver. So yes, I'll be tall player.
Good stuff, Ben. Thanks for the call.
But yeah.
Didn't they let you keep the football?
I thought so. When he said that, I thought they let you keep the footballs.
I think you did.
I think so.
I think that was like one of the appeals to it, that you could do that. So I'm looking at, I pulled up Spotrac and looked at the cap hits for 2020 for the Titans, and we were discussing with John about, you know, are there some veteran guys that either you restructure or you cut bait with? Cam Wake is another one of those. Cam Wake is, the cap hit is $8.25 million. And I know his deal was, it was a three-year deal, but it was kind of a one-year. I mean, they could walk away. I think the dead cap wouldn't be much. I feel like that's somebody that they probably cut bait with. I don't think Cam Wake's back. And you can save some cap room there.
It's too bad that you never really got a chance to see him in the groove. Yeah. In fact, I was watching the Inside the NFL last night.
He's been gone so long, I really forgot.
Yeah, right. He wasn't on your mind. Phil Simms mentioned him last night. He goes, that would have been the guy that could have helped him in a game like Sunday's game.
Right.
So in the perfect world, if he could have done what he had done the last several years.
What did he get paid this year?
This year, he, like, 5.5, maybe a little more. I'm looking it up. Hang on.
At 5.5, wouldn't you?
Well, he's supposed to make 8.3.
Oh. Oh, he's supposed to get a raise. What if?
Well, I'm pulling up the, I had 2020.
All right, you do that. We'll come back. We'll figure out what it is on the other side.
We will regroup.
And close out hour number one next.